Well, it's about that time of year again where people are celebrating All Hallows Eve, Halloween, October 31st. It's coming up here on Tuesday. And here at Revival, we do have a Halloween alternative for the little ones. It's going to be great outside, free candy. There's going to be 2,000 pounds of it. It's going to be amazing. But this is one of the biggest spending times out of the year, second only or third only to Thanksgiving and Christmas. But people spend so much money on Halloween. And so many people are obsessed with this day, and actually this is one of the worst days for animals all over our nation. I don't know if you know this, but more animals get taken, stolen on Halloween than any other night of the year, which is amazing, and there's more animal sacrifice on this year than any other year as well. Children will be roaming the neighborhoods in costumes of Ninja Turtles and princesses and devils and demons, and our TV programs will be filled with horror movies and scary flicks to no end. And I remember probably the most scary movie I've ever seen. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's called The Exorcist. And I don't recommend it, by the way, but I saw it as a young guy and as a young man, and it scared the tar out of me. And because they said it was based on a real story, on a true story, I'm like, are you kidding? This kind of power, this kind of evil is possible? And for me, it really shook me. Even when I see the trailers now, when it comes this Halloween time, that's always on one of the stations, I have to turn away because it's so scary to me. Even rocks my soul. I'm pretty sure I'm not scared of a whole lot, but that rocks me. But this kind of power, this kind of evil, it's amazing. The gal who played in The Exorcist, Linda Blair, she had tons of nightmares throughout all the shootings and had sleepless nights because it felt so real to her as well. But this kind of demon possession, it's real, and it's real scary. It's not just in Hollywood movies, but it's in real life too. And tonight, we're going to see how demon possession, really at its peak, is going to be seen here in the life that Jesus encounters. It's like something out of a horror movie for sure. Let's look at Mark chapter 5 together. Mark chapter 5, verse 1. And it says this. Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit who had his dwelling among the tombs. And no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried out with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." For he said to him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." Then he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Also he begged him earnestly that he would not send him out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding there near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, "Send us into the swine that we may enter them." At once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. So those who fed the swine fled. And they told it in the cities and in the country. And they went out to see what had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had a legion sitting and clothed in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who saw it told them now it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. And he got into the boat, and he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go to your friends and tell what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. Remember last week we saw Jesus and our disciples. They came from the other side of the Sea of Galilee to this area of Cursi, or the Gadarenes, or Gadara. And they encountered this great storm in the sea, And Jesus calmed the storm with just a word by his mouth, and the whole sea and everything, the boistering, all went as placid as a bathtub. It was so you could skip a rock across the whole side. But this miracle, it marveled the disciples, and most likely they needed their faith bolstered because Jesus knew what was going to be on the other side of the Sea of Galilee that was going to be waiting them. But they needed this faith lesson to move in their discipleship and in their growth. But think about the plan and God's sovereignty, and God's in control of all things. And Jesus is teaching these kingdom parables to all these disciples and all these listeners. And he knows about the man across the Sea of Galilee who needs his touch, a touch from Jesus. And Jesus is willing to take his disciples through the storm just to get to the other side to meet with this man who's called Legion. He took his whole disciples through the storm for this one man. As we read there, Jesus gets in a boat and he leaves after. So he took his disciples through this crazy night of bailing out water out of their little boats, and this whole flotilla of boats lands on the other side in this area of Gadara, and all of that for one man. In this story, it's found in Matthew and Luke's gospel as well. And what a story of love that Jesus and his commitment of freeing men from their bondage is. Jesus is committed to freeing men from their bondage. He travels overnight just to get to this one area in Gadara in the county. And as we saw on the slide last week, and as we can see again on our slide, where they came across, they went from Tiberias, that 7.5 miles, all the way to Kersey. As you can see in Kersey, there's a little point, almost a peninsula, as we're going to talk about later, as this cliff, that's the only cliff around this whole mountainside. If you look to the right, this east side, the right side, it's 41 miles of the Golan Heights, the Golani, and everything on the left side, the west side's basically almost beachfront. So there's no mountains, there's nothing on that side. Only by that one little area called Kersey or Gadara is where these cliffs are. And that's the only place, and even to this day, we'll see here in a second, that's where this demon-possessed man was. It says in verse 1 that a man met with him with an unclean spirit, it said. And they came to the other side of the sea in the country of the Gadarenes. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately before their feet were hitting the shore, there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. And it's interesting that in the New Testament, that's where we get so much demon possession. There isn't any really hint of demon possession in the Old Testament, maybe in Genesis 6. But for the most part, there is no demon possession in the Old Testament. And you may ask, why? Why all of a sudden there's so much demon possession here in the Gospels for sure? And it starts to actually wane off as it gets into the rest of the New Testament. And I would think that the reason why is because it's part of what we call the Messianic era. It's the era of Jesus. The Jesus is hitting the scene, and the demons are definitely rallying to cause havoc around. And interestingly enough, too, there isn't any demon possession in Jerusalem or in most of the Jewish cities, or mostly the outskirts in Gentile cities that they have these demon possessions that occur. But maybe you'd ask, why don't we see demon possession today? And I believe there is demon possession today. And mostly maybe in foreign cities, foreign lands, I think, some distant lands. And I've heard of it for many places far away. But who are these demons? These are unembodied spirits. And where did they come from? I think the simplest answer is that these demons, these unembodied spirits, they come from the fallen angels. And if you remember in Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14, it's the description of Satan before the fall and before the Garden of Eden. And Lucifer, as he was most likely the main worship cherub there before God, he decided that he wanted to be worshipped himself. It's called the five I wills of Satan, found there in Ezekiel 28. And God said, I don't think so. And so a third of the angels thought it was a good idea to worship Satan. They thought he did have a good thing going. And so a third of the angels were kicked out of heaven with Lucifer. But the good news is we have two-thirds still left on our side. So that's still 2-1. That's good odds still. But they were kicked out, and they're most likely these unembodied spirits who are looking to possess man and looking to wreak havoc for sure. The other thought maybe that they could be unembodied spirits from Genesis chapter 6, where these angels came down and cohabited with women, and because of that, there was this offspring, and those were killed all through the flood. So there could be unembodied spirits or not. Either way, whatever wicked origin they come from, they do still want to reap havoc. And I believe there is demon possession today. I come from I've been a pastor for about 22 years, and my first 6 years was in South LA area at Calvary Chapel, South Bay. I remember on one particular Sunday, there was a disturbance in the main sanctuary, and we had this giant Samoan. He was about 350 pounds. He was a big cat. You know what I'm saying? These Samoans, they don't mess around. They're strong as all out, all get out. And this guy's name was Tuvai, and I saw Tuvai pick up this little Filipino girl and threw him over her shoulder, which was super easy for him, and he went outside, out through the back door of the church, and a bunch of the elders and pastors went with him too, and so we're all running to see what's going on, and this little Filipino girl is pushing this giant Samoan back, and she's like 110 pounds maybe, and this guy's 350. And she is pretty much not being dominated by all of us men that are sitting around that area. And it was wild. These voices that were coming out of this little girl's mouth, it made the hair on your neck stand up. You're like, whoa, this is crazy. And it turned out that through all of this, you know, we kept praying for her and you know, telling her that she needs to listen to the words of Jesus and ministering to her, and over probably a 30-minute period of time, she finally broke down and was crying, and it was gone. And her grandmother, who brought this young gal with her, we asked her, man, what happened? Why did you come? What's going on? And she begins to tell us a story how she took, this young girl was really sick, and so she took her to the Philippines. And in the Philippines, they asked this doctor, this so-called doctor, to put four little men inside of her to help keep her up when she was ill. And so she hadn't been sick for the whole time, but it was these four little men that were supposedly, you know, dominating this girl's life. And there was voices coming out of her that was really almost like this story, which is crazy. So I do think demon possession is still true here today. I think it's absolutely possible, for sure. It can happen. But can Christians be demon possessed? No, I don't believe Christians can be demon-possessed. I don't believe God has a timeshare with his people. He doesn't share some with us and then some with Satan, some with demons. No, I believe that all of that is, it's either you're a Christian or you're not, and if you are, you can't be demon-possessed for sure. But there are doorways for non-believers to knock on that may open themselves up to occult behavior, Ouija boards, tarot cards, astrological signs, all these things can open doors to the occult, as well as drug use too. You know, the Bible talks about drug use and it calls it, or witchcraft, and calls it pharmakia in the Greek. And that's where we get our word pharmacy. It comes from this word witchcraft. And it means mind altering. And so those mind altering drugs, those also could be doorways to allow the enemy to come in and to take up residence. But demon possession is real today as it was back then. I don't think it's as common, because I think the devil's more concerned about deception than possession. He'd rather use false teachers and crazy pulpiteers to try to deceive many as opposed to just possessing one person. So I think he's more focused on that than anything else that he's doing. So, as you look at verse 2 again, notice what happens. And when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. So immediately, picture this scene. Soon as the disciples hit the shore, this is what they see in the distance. They hear screaming, and this is actually a picture from that area. If we were to land a little boat, our little flotilla of boats from last week's adventure, this is actually a picture of the tombs and the caves of Kersey. Just like we saw across in the picture going across the road there, this would be from the shore. This is what you would see. So imagine if you're the disciples. You land on the shore and you see these tombs and these caves, these caverns, and you hear this screaming from there. And the screaming's getting louder and louder as it's getting close to you. And as soon as you hit the shore, you see this naked man who's bloody, been cutting himself. and remnants of chains maybe around his wrists and ankles, screaming and running towards you. I mean, talk about your scary movie scene. What would you do if you're the disciples? You've been all night out there, you know, hoofing and moving water out of the boats. You hit the shore. You're probably thinking, wow, this is a great time. We can rest. Finally, I can't wait to see the shore. And all of a sudden, here's this demon-possessed guy running down. His chains are, he's not bound. He's got remnants of these chains that are coming and running towards him and screaming. Man, if you're disciples, I'd be a little freaked out if I was them at this point. But this demon-possessed man, supernaturally strong, able to break chains, that nobody could control him nor contain him. And this is one of the signs that I believe of someone who is truly demon-possessed, that there'll be multiple voices, like Legion. He said there's many of us in here. And they'll be super strong, too. I've seen, like we said, with this young little Filipino girl pushing a giant Samoan around. It's a feat in and of itself. But there's a difference between someone who's demon-possessed, who has maybe some of these signs of multiple voices, multiple strength, and usually there's a destructive pattern for those who are demon-possessed, as opposed to someone who's just mentally ill. But it can be very similar to the same kind of behavior. On a similar story, after I'd been a pastor for 6 years down there at Calvary Chapel South Bay in South LA area, I came out here to Temecula. And on one day, I think it was a Thursday, I was walking with our senior pastor, and we were walking through the foyer of the church, and no one was around. I heard this voice in the distance saying, I need blank and Jesus. And the blank and Jesus part was a little odd to me, and made my spidey sense tingle, and my dog ear went up. I go, that's odd. Hang on a second. And I can hear him talking with one of the groundskeepers, and I said, there's something not right here. As we got closer, he was able to see our senior pastor. He goes, oh, I need to talk to you. I need blank and Jesus. I'm like, for sure you do. Absolutely. You can't put that and Jesus together. It doesn't work so well. And as we got closer, he was really erratic in his movements, and he couldn't sit still. And our pastor tried to pray with him, and he was just dropping more F-bombs. And I'm like, man, you know what? I had a bad feeling about this. I said, okay, after our pastor was done praying for the guy, he goes, you know what, sir, why don't you have a seat on the couch real quick? We'll get you some help. And I turned around, and sure enough, as I turned around to tell the pastor, there's nothing else you can do here, you need to go. This guy jumped up, and he tried to attack our pastor, and we took him down and helped him make a better decision. And the police came and helped him make even a better decision. But he was trying to break the cuffs, and he was trying to kick out the window. Brought the canine unit out for him. But it was interesting because he didn't have superhuman strength for sure. If I was able to take him down, not so much. But we did zip tie him, which in zip ties aren't super strong, but we were able to subdue the guy. But it turned out, like we said earlier, that sometimes that pharmakia, that drug use, can open up that occult pattern. This guy, for the very first time, he was a mortgage broker, and the night before he smoked weed for the very first time. He went and got some weed from some street kid, and he woke up that next morning and told his wife, I'm not feeling good, I think I should go down to the church. And she's like, well, sounds like a plan, go ahead. And by the time he got down to the church, he had completely lost, he didn't remember anything. And after, the police took him away, his wife came down to the church and apologized, and now I was a little skinned up, and she's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, it's not a problem. Better get beat up by one of the pastors than by some, biker at a bar or something. It's not that bad. And she told me the story, and I go, man, that leads into that. But there's a difference between those who are maybe have a mental issue or something challenged within their brain as opposed to demon possession. I think those are some of the clues to help us realize some of those differences, is that Legion here had multiple voices. He had superhuman strength, able to break chains, and nobody can hold him down. And here he was in this region. And I can imagine this region, you couldn't even go in this region, that whole area, because he was so powerful, he was so ornery, and he was there always trying to hurt people. I'm sure all the neighborhood kids walked around looking at him going, I just dare you to go down there and mess with that guy. I'm sure all the little kids around the area, it was one of their hot spots to get into trouble. Well, this demon makes a beeline for Jesus. He comes running out screaming, and in verse 6, he says, and when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshiped him. This demon comes down and he runs down and worships Jesus. He's there at his feet. This Greek word's proskuneo, and it means to kiss the feet of. It means to bow down low, to kiss even the feet of. He worshiped Jesus. And in verse 7, he goes on to say, "And he cried out with a loud voice, 'What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? And I implore you by God that you do not torment me.'" The demons even understand who Jesus is, and they believe in Jesus. The demons believe in Jesus. You know, in James 2:19, it says, "You believe that there is one God? Good. You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble." Even the demons have proper doctrine. They know what's true about Jesus. He is the Son of God. They even say that, "Hey, Jesus, we know who you are." They have proper doctrine. And what a warning for those who say, "I believe in God," but that's not enough. Because even the demons believe in God. Believing in God isn't enough. I know some of us maybe have friends or coworkers who say, "I believe in God." Believing in God isn't enough. It doesn't make them followers of Jesus, just like these demons are not followers of Jesus. But they believe, the demons recognize who Jesus is. He was the Son of God. And then they say, "Don't torment us," because there is a time that they will be tormented. As the fallen angels, they will be judged and for their disobedience. And in Matthew's gospel, Legion says, "Don't judge us," or "Don't torment us before our time." And in Luke's gospel, the same story, it says, "Don't command us to go out into the abyss," the abusos in Greek, and it's an outer darkness. They know their time is coming. They know that what's going to happen to them. They just weren't sure of the time. They're saying, "Jesus, don't let this be the time." Because there is a time that they will be cast out. In Jude 1:6, it says, "And the angels who did not keep their first proper domain, but left their own habitation, he has reserved an everlasting chains under darkness for judgment on that great day." The demons know their time is limited. And in verse 8, he goes on, "And he said to them, 'Come out of the man, unclean spirit.' Then he asked him, 'What is your name?' And he answered, saying, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.'" He calls himself Legion, and a legion in a Roman army is a little over 6,000 men. So he's claiming that there's over 6,000. I don't think he necessarily means there's actually 6,000 demons in there, but possibly 2,000, because 2,000 pigs, these swine, take a swine dive into the water later and die. But there could be. I mean, that would be amazing to know that there was 6,000 demons within this one man. And he says, "Don't tell us to leave this territory as well." And I find that interesting too, because apparently it seems that demons can be very territorial. And I don't know if they're assigned to certain territories, but it would appear that they are certainly territorial for the most part. In Daniel chapter 10, it talks about that same idea, the prince of Persia, his area of territory there as he was buffering Gabriel, and Michael the archangel had to come and help him out to get the message to Daniel. They said, "Don't kick us out of this region." So this demon, he says, "Hey, there's 6,000 of us in here." And maybe to impress Jesus or maybe to scare the disciples, this vast number. But either way, that's a lot. And in verse 10, he goes on to say, "And also, he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country," like we said. Verse 11, "Now a large herd of swine was feeding near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, 'Send us into the swine that we may enter them.' And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went into entered the swine there, and about 2,000, and the herd ran violently down into the steep place near the sea and drowned into the sea." Demons are always looking to enter bodies, even animal bodies apparently too. They're not just humans, but animal bodies as well. And Jesus gives them the permission to do so. But when demons leave, you need to make sure when there is an exorcism, if you will, that's cast out, that once that house is cleaned out, that you re-inhabit it with the truth of who Jesus is. Turn with me real quick to Matthew chapter 12. This is what Jesus says about unclean spirits. Hold your place there. Matthew chapter 12. Verse 43. Matthew 12, verse 43. It says this. When an unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through dry places seeking rest and finds none. Then he says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when he comes, he finds it empty, swept, and put in order. Then he goes and takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself. And they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. So shall it be in this wicked generation. So even here, Jesus is telling us, hey, when that exorcism happens, when that demon leaves, you need to reoccupy that with Jesus. He needs to be the one who cleans it, and he's the one who needs to occupy it. If not, even by Jesus, he says that that demon can go out and bring seven other demons back, even worse than himself. And this will be a sign of the last days. There'll be more demon possession. Turn back with me to Mark 5. So the swine get permission to run into the Sea of Galilee. It's interesting enough, next to these tombs, as we said, there's only one cliff there that leads into the Sea of Galilee, probably reinforcing that this is truly that place where Gadara was. So the bacon is ruined, and this is actually the first mention of deviled ham, by the way, and all of the ham is ruined at that point. But in verse 14, he goes on and says, so those who fed the swine fled, and they told it to this city and in the country, and they went out to see what had happened. Verse 15, then they came to Jesus and saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion, sitting and clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told what had happened to those who had been demon-possessed and had the swine. Then they began to plead with him and depart from this region. Jesus, leave here. The problem with this swine, too, in this area, is that most likely this could have been Jews that owned these swine. It's very unkosher for Jews to own swine. And they were probably selling it because the Decapolis, deca means 10, polis means city. So these 10 Gentile cities that are most likely feeding with these 2,000 swine. That's a lot of money back then, too. Think about it. I mean, this sanctuary seats 1,000. Imagine we had 2,000 swine that we just killed. I mean, that's a lot of money for these people and for their economy. And they were not super happy about that. And Jesus allowed these demons to enter into there, and they were to die. But they cared more about the money than their own Jewish laws. And that can be a problem even for us today, too. Many of us love money more than the commands of God. Whatever it takes, whatever compromises our moral and values. But Jesus said, you can't serve both God and money. They should have been more excited about this legion being gone, this man being undemon-possessed, than their swine. Because people are always worth more than anything else. A person's soul is worth far more than gold or anything else. So in verse 18, and when he had gone into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him. This is the third time of begging. The first time, legion begs. The second time, the people of the area beg. The third time of begging is by the man who was possessed. And Jesus tells him he can't go with him. And notice this whole boat ride through the storm was to get to this man to change his life. Jesus freed men from their bondage. And all for this one man, the length that Jesus goes to reach one person. What length did Jesus go to reach you? What did he do? How far did he go? How long did he wait to reach you? Jesus made that extra trip through that storm for this one man. And the people of the area told Jesus, we don't want you here. So Jesus respected their wishes. Jesus says, okay, you don't want me here, no problem, I'll leave. And he respected what they said. Jesus won't force his way into anybody's life. But changing people's lives is what Jesus does. And this is what he came for. He came to change people's lives. And many people miss the touch of Jesus because they don't want him there. But he is the one that's going to save their life. He could have done much there at the Decapolis, but he didn't. And there are three aspects of Jesus changing lives found in our text I'd like you to draw your attention to. The first one is the freedom from bondage. Freedom from bondage. In verse 15, it says for years, for a long time in Luke's gospel, that this man who was possessed with this legion lived there. He was there for a long time. And many of us have lived in bondage too for a long time. And Jesus comes to free this man from that bondage. Maybe we weren't demon-possessed, but maybe we were possessed by possessions. I know for me, it was that case for me. I mean, I lived my life, you know, a life of a criminal for so many years because I wanted more stuff. You know, I wanted more things. I wanted faster, bigger, better, you know, over and over. It was chasing that mighty dollar. And so maybe it's not demon possession, but maybe it's possession that you run after, and maybe that's the bondage even today. It's so easy for us to fall into that bondage. And I know I followed that deception for years. And Jesus frees Legion from that bondage, and Jesus can free us from that same bondage too. Look at the contrast of this freedom that Jesus gives. First, this man was running around screaming. Now he's sitting quietly. From making his home in the tombs, from going back to his home and friends, it says in another gospel, maybe he had a family. Could you imagine having your dad or your brother or your husband gone for years and hearing about this legend of Legion and all the things that he can do and the powerful and who this man was and cutting himself and all the scars, no doubt, all over his body, now coming home in his right mind? When Jesus frees the man from that bondage, that's what could happen. From being naked to being clothed at Jesus' feet, from being out of his mind to being in his right mind, from cutting himself and being a danger to all to hanging out with Jesus and his disciples. Jesus stops the bleeding from this man and he releases him from bondage. And really, we all bleed in different ways. There's all of us that we have different sins that happen. And really, the problem wasn't that Legion was so strong. The problem wasn't that he was screaming or running around naked. The problem was his heart needed a new possession. And I think a lot of us, we get so caught up with that outward sign of how we want to clean something up, how we want to clean up the blood. But really, it's the heart that's the problem. And that's the wound that has to be healed. When you fix the heart, you stop the blood. And Jesus went after the heart here of Legion and cleansed him and set him free. Jesus changes lives by freeing men from their bondage. The second aspect of Jesus changing lives is not everybody wants it. Not everybody wants a change. Verses 16 and 17, the townspeople didn't care that this man was freed. After all those years of having to deal with maybe the legend of Legion, not being able to go in that area, they didn't care about that. They didn't care about that. It was off limits. They cared more about their prized pigs than they did about this demon-possessed man. People are worth more than the pigs. You know, and some will want you to stay the way that you are. Not everybody wants change. I know when I gave my life to Jesus, all my friends didn't want me to. They wanted me to stay the way I was. They didn't want me to have a life change. They didn't want me. They wanted to pull me back. They wanted to pull me down. You know, and not everybody wants change. You know, I've met with people before, a couple that was living together, and one wanted change. One said, no, we don't want change. I don't want to stop living together. This is what I want to do. You know, and that's part of it, too. Not everybody wants change, because that person who doesn't want the change sees the conviction in their own hearts that they should want the change, and they don't give in. They don't surrender to it, but they need to. The Bible tells us that John 3:19, that men love the darkness more than the light. They want to pull us down and make us compromise. But not everybody wants change in their lives by Jesus. Jesus changes lives, but we have to surrender. And that's what we need to consider always. The third aspect of Jesus changing lives is found in verse 19, as we said. And if you notice, Jesus didn't let him go. But in verse 19, he told him, "You go to your friends and tell them what the Lord has done for you and how he has compassion on you." He told him to go and tell what God has done for you. And really, this third aspect of a life that's been changed by Jesus is sharing your testimony. This is the first man. Before any of the disciples were sent out, this is the first man was sent out and talk about how good God is. Before even Jesus sends out the disciples, he sent this man out, this previously demon-possessed by Legion, out to share his testimony. And he went out to the Decapolis, the 10 cities, and told his story. And I can imagine all the scars that he had on his body and how they... people would probably look at him and go, "Man, what happened to you? And where have you been, for one? And man, we heard about you." And I'm sure as I looked at him, he was able to share his testimony, how he was living in the tombs and screaming and running around naked and cutting himself, and how this man Jesus came to him and how this man Jesus freed him. What a testimony he has. You know, I think a lot of times we try to cover our scars of what we've been through, what's taken us to where we are today. But you know what? Those scars they're visible for some of us, that we can show that this is what God has saved me from. And so I'm sure the scars of Legion was easy for everyone to see. And I bet his scars are a great talking point of opening up how his testimony of who he encountered Jesus and what Jesus did for him. We can use our scars to our advantage. And he shared the change that Jesus has done. And we can do that same thing. We should be able to share the changes that Jesus has done in our life. I try to look for someone every week that I can share my testimony with. How God had saved me. How I had a $500,000 warrant for my arrest. And I was looking at 30 years plus for jail. And how God said, "No, not for you. I'm going to make you a pastor instead." And how God does that. It's an amazing part of the grace of God. It's the amazing part how much God loves us and how much he's willing to go, how far he's willing to go for us. We should share that change. And interestingly enough, this is the only man that said to Jesus, "Can I come with you?" And Jesus said, "No." And the rich young ruler is the only man that Jesus said, "Come with me," and he said, "I can't." The one who said he wouldn't go, the one who said he would go but couldn't. Legion couldn't go with him. Jesus told him, "Do you stay behind and you tell people what God has done for you and the grace that he has shown you." You know, if you're here and you're a Christian tonight, you have a testimony. Everybody has a testimony who's been saved, who's been born again. And to share that testimony, what God has done for us, is so important. Legion had an amazing testimony. And I always wondered, if Legion would have went with Jesus and his disciples, I mean, what a great testimony he would have had with all the other disciples. And then there was Legion, who could just really, whenever things go, no one can be saved. And you go, no, Legion, he was saved. Maybe we're here and we have someone that we think that this person's unreachable. I've been praying for this person for so long, and they're unreachable. Jesus can reach them. You know, Jesus went through a storm with his disciples to reach him, to reach Legion. I'm sure his family probably was praying for him. His friends were probably praying for him. Every time they heard another legend of Legion, I'm sure they were going, "Oh, God, do something, do something." If you have a friend or a family member you think is unreachable, remind yourself of Legion. Legion was reachable because of Jesus, and Jesus had compassion on him and showed him grace. You know, Jesus frees men from bondage today, just as he freed this man in our story. And this surrendering anything that's holding us back to setting us free with Jesus is what we need to lay at his feet. You know, Jesus is willing to change our lives. He wants to. He's in the business of it. But it's up to us for us to surrender, to come down and to fall at his feet, just as these demons did to worship Jesus. We have that same opportunity as well to stop and to worship him. So I pray this week that you guys will be able to look for those opportunities to share your testimony with maybe those who are a little strange, a little odd, and be able to tell them how much Jesus loves them. Let's pray.